And on the telephone line, we're joined by Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Chad.
Hey, Rich. How many players will the Patriots sign while I'm on with you?
My God, Bob Kraft's spending money like he's at Orchids of Asia.
Oh, jeez. You said it, not me.
Yeah. What is going on? I can't even keep track. So let's see. They got a tight end. They got a pass rusher, a defensive back. What else in the last few minutes?
Yeah, run-stopping defensive tackle. Need about six wide receivers, but apparently they're working on one or two of those. So that's $69.3 million they had in cap space. They're using it. They're spending it up, and they're bringing in some pretty interesting quality players. It's going to be a little bit of a different look on the Patriots, a lot of unfamiliar faces next year, but seems like a real upgrade on talent, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Absolutely, and then that sort of overshadows the news from late last week of the signing of Cam Newton to a one-year deal that I thought was just a pretty smart move, that it gives them a little bit of leverage, and it doesn't mean that's the end of the quarterback search.
Yeah, it tells me Cam's kind of realistic about where he is in his career, actually. I mean, everybody kind of panicked when they saw it was 1 year and up to $14 million. But the reality is it's probably going to be $3, $4, $5 million once, unless he's in the MVP race or makes the Pro Bowl, that sort of thing. So if you're paying him more money, that means he had a really good year. And at the base of it, you're paying him basically decent backup quarterback money. So if they want him as their starting quarterback next year, and they think with a full training camp and better personnel around him and better health for himself, having to deal with COVID after the first couple of games of the season, they think that guy can be their quarterback, then we're going to find out. But if they don't think he can be their quarterback, they can move on easily enough with this contract that he signed.
Well, and whether it's Newton or somebody else, they have to be excited with the signing of a very talented tight end from Tennessee. And that's great, because that position was the Bermuda Triangle for the Patriots the last couple of years.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. Everybody thought they would go after Jonnu Smith, who they signed today, or Hunter Henry, who Bill Belichick's known forever since he was a high school player at the Chargers tight end. People kind of figured it'd be one or the other, and it would be telling which one he signed, because that would kind of indicate what the need is, because their skill sets are a little bit different. Henry's more of a specific pass catcher, is more prolific in terms of catching the ball over his career. Smith's a guy who had a career high 41 catches last year, a little under 500 yards, but he's really good at everything. Really good running after the catch, good blocker. You can move him all over the place. And remember, the Patriots drafted two tight ends last year with different skill sets. Mm. Dalton Keene was kind of H-back type, and Devin Asiasi's the big guy. I think the fact that they signed Smith indicates that they think Asiasi is probably more capable of being their second tight end than Keene is at this point, and that Smith with Asiasi in a different role can really upgrade that position.
We're talking with Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. See that he put it out there earlier today, but you probably already had the number. But if not, were you tempted to text Tom Brady now that he's inviting people to reach out to him?
No, you know what? I'm going to leave that guy alone, I think. But I'm sure his number will be a different one pretty soon if it is already.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's all about. Why do I feel it's awful? I feel this way, but I suspect he's selling something.
Yeah, it's a decent chance you get a 20% off the TB12 broccoli cookbook or something like that. But there always seems to be some sort of PR marketing tie with everything that he does now. You know, his Twitter handle and Instagram and all that. He's pretty hard to promote things, so. Wouldn't be a surprise if we're something along those lines, but he's getting a lot of attention for it, right? So I guess it's effective.
Yeah, there you go. We lost one of the all-time greats in the world of boxing, also in New England sports, over the weekend with the death of a marvelous Marvin Hagler, the pride of Brockton. And for anybody who wasn't around, it's hard to explain to them how big Marvin Hagler was here in New England back in the day.
Yeah, I think right in the heyday of his career in the mid-'80s, probably right around 85 when the famous Hearns Hagler brawl, three round fight. The first round's probably the most exciting 3 minutes you'll ever see. Right around that time, I would probably rank the favorite Boston sports teams as Celtics, Bruins, Marvin Hagler, Red Sox, Patriots. He was covered like you would cover a team beat nowadays. There were reporters in Boston, especially on the TV side, who really helped build their own reputations by covering everything Hagler did, whether he's fighting in Worcester or whether he's fighting in London. John Dennis, in particular, we all know as a sports radio host, was somebody who really got in well with the Hagler camp. And when he turned into this just incredibly prominent, respected, popular boxer, a lot of the Boston media kind of went on for a pretty enjoyable ride there until, you know, 87, when he quote-unquote lost to Hagler and then lost to Leonard and then decided to walk away, something else a lot of boxers don't do at the right time, and Hagler did. So it's a huge loss. He was you hear a lot of stories from people over the last couple of days about sort of mensch-like things he did for them, just what a good guy he was if you ran into him in the, you know, in Faneuil Hall or something like that. And Boston icon, not one we thought about a lot because he lived a kind of quiet life up in New Hampshire, but someone who, when you hear terrible news like this, all these incredible memories come rushing back.
Yeah, man, that was the last time I think I really cared about boxing. But those bouts with Hitman Hearns and with Sugar Ray, and you're right, that first round with Hearns, that was better than anything in the Rocky movies.
Yeah, it was. I actually called Al Michaels today because of all the billion things that he's called in his career. He was the broadcaster on that fight, too. He got paid by Bob Arum, the promoter, to call that on TV, and then it was on HBO as well. And, you know, we think of Al as Malcolm Butler, interception, Miracle on Ice, Dave Henderson's home run, all these incredible things. Well, he had a Boston tie with the Hagler-Hearns fight, too, and I wanted to find some media tie to talk to for this. Somebody who was there and saw it up close, and he was ringside for that. So, pretty incredible the run there for Hagler. And boxing, you just don't have characters like that anymore. You just don't have these charismatic personalities who are all willing to fight each other. And that's probably why the sport is at the level that it's at now.
Now, you went out on a limb several weeks ago and said you think this year's Red Sox team might be better than expected. Not world championship caliber, certainly, but might surprise some people. And I mean, I've been watching some of the spring games more than I thought I would. They had a pretty good run going, and there are some positive signs with this team. And if nothing else, after last year's debacle, I feel like it's going to be a fairly likable team.
Yeah, we got players fans are going to like. They just don't know who they are yet. Similar in a little bit of a way to 2013, where Napoli and Drew and Uehara and Johnny Gomes and Ben Sherrington brought in those seven veteran free agents, and every single one of them worked out to some degree. And that, you know, that team went on to overachieve and win the World Series, and all those guys were beloved right up until they were traded the next year or the next 2 years. But guys can win you over pretty fast, and I think Hans Loom has actually done a pretty good job of bringing in players that the fans are going to like just in kind of complementary roles. I think T.K. Hernandez is going to be popular. If Marwin Gonzalez can hit a little bit again, he's already someone who's sort of emerged as a leader down there in Fort Myers. He'll probably be a well-liked guy. Renfro's going to hit some home runs, and kind of magnifies the real issue of this team last year. They had guys who didn't belong on Major League roster. They used 27 pitchers. I think I would bet, I put the over-under at 12, they'd never see another inning in the majors again.
Yeah.
And now they've got guys who at least are capable Major League pitchers, not just with E-Rod coming back or Garrett Richards being signed, but a kid like Pivetta who could really take a step forward. Matty Andreese has been around with the Rays and Angels and can help you in that swingman or bullpen role. They've added quality depth, and that's what they needed. The pitching was abysmal last year. The lineup was actually good, and I think the lineup will be good again, and the pitching will be average, maybe a little bit better than that. And in the end, you know, they're not going to win 109 games and surpass 2018, but they're probably going to be right there on the fringe of the wild card race going down to the final days of the season, which is a huge upgrade on last year.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. I see that you were not all that excited for Maine native Oliver Wahlstrom.
I think one of the first things I had to write when I got over to the Boston.com side of things after being an editor at the Globe was when he had that crazy move in the midget Pee Wee game.
Oh, yeah.
At the Garden. I think he was 10 years old at the time, and we were all trying to figure out who this guy was. And I was like, well, I went to college with his dad at UMaine, so maybe they'll track him down that way. This kid was, but he had made the commitment to UMaine when he was like 11 years old or something, and then he ended up going to BC briefly. But I just remember a time when BC wasn't considered an obvious upgrade over going to Maine, so that always kind of ticked me off about him. But he seems like a great kid, and he's an absolutely great hockey player. It's too bad he's not with the Bruins, and too bad he was never a Black Bear.
Now, speaking of a young athletic talent, it's good to see some true basketball skills in the Finn family emerging.
Yeah, I don't know if the genetics are skipping a generation or anything, but my daughter was on the Channel 8 News down here for one of their games, playing defense and making a pass, and that's something I never did either one of those things back in my not-so-glory days, so maybe she's just learned to play the game the right way, and their old man never did or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little older, so I don't remember this personally. Just the word on the street was in those pickup games in the pit that defense for you was that time when you were waiting for someone to get you the ball.
Play the game style, score them, right? So, who cares about stopping from scoring? Just hit that three when they get a two on you. That's what you got to do.
So, absolutely.
Kind of the ABA mindset.
Oh, I like that. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Boston.com, joining us here on a Monday. Chad, appreciate it as always. Hope your week goes well, and we'll check in with you again soon.
Thanks, Rich. Got to go see you. The pass signed here now.
Yeah, we've probably been three more since we started talking. Thanks, Chad.
Take care, my friend.
Chad Finn with us on Downtown.